know you like that.
How long you been back, man?
Morgan, everybody, how are you? This is the Saturday show here on the KSL Sports Zone. My name is Jay Catch. I am running solo today, but don't worry, Michelle Bodkin will stop by later on in today's program. Fun one ahead is it is the final regular season weekend of college football. Had an absolutely thrilling game yesterday for Utah State at New Mexico. They went in double overtime. Crazy, crazy stuff. Scotty G was on the call for it down there in Albuquerque. Fun to see that. We are just moments away from Michigan and Ohio State getting underway up at the Big House in Ann Arbor, Michigan. We've got BYU and Utah in action later on today. We got a lot to cover ahead on today's program. Let's just put it that way. I got Alex Napolis producing for me behind the glass. Alex, what's up, my man?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
No, doing well. Okay, so Alex, on the Saturday show, we like to start off the show by asking what the highlight of your week was. But I'm going to forego that this week because Thanksgiving was Thursday, and obviously a lot of spending time with family and friends, watching some football, eating food. How was your Thanksgiving, first off?
Thanksgiving was good. Just went over to my aunt's, had some tacos and tamales for Thanksgiving.
Okay.
So, you know, good times.
Okay, so you had the fun Thanksgiving then.
I did, yeah.
Okay.
Turkey, so you know, turkey's not my jam sometimes. It's a little bland
it's not my jam, period, typically, but I'll just say that. But
when you have an opportunity to have some tacos and tamales for Thanksgiving, yeah, I think you gotta take it.
Absolutely. I want to come over to your house for Thanksgiving moving forward. I'm all over that. But no, fun times. Okay, so I threw it out on Twitter, and I'd love for you guys' responses. I'm at Jacob C. Hatch on Twitter. What is the best Thanksgiving like food or traditional Thanksgiving food, non-traditional, I guess, in your case, like tamales, Alex, that is best eaten as leftovers? Does that make sense? Like it's better the day after, a couple days after, versus eating it in the moment. You got an answer off the top of your head?
Oh man, I think probably, I don't know why, but my mind goes immediately to mashed potatoes.
Really?
I don't have anything else in my mind at the moment other than mashed potatoes. Because okay. That's the one Thanksgiving food that I think can go good with anything.
That's actually not a bad option there. Now, I'm not typically a mashed potatoes guy. I'm more of a baked potato person. But Thanksgiving, obviously, I know that the traditional is to do mashed potatoes. I endure it, but it's mine. I'm not really a turkey guy, as I said. But I'm going to tell you, if I'm going to eat turkey, I'm going to eat it cold the day after. I'm going to make a sandwich out of it. And it is 10 times better than it is in the moment, actually sitting down there piping hot at Thanksgiving dinner. End of story. There's no other in my mind that's the best, like in terms of you can reheat it and enjoy it, but it's cold turkey. Make a sandwich out of it, grab one of those dinner rolls, a little mustard on it, you know, pretty good.
Put some stuffing in there too?
Maybe if you have it. Like, here's
absolutely
the thing. In both my immediate family and also my in-laws, stuffing seems to go very quickly. Apparently, I've got a family that loves stuffing on like my immediate family, my parents and everything. And then on my in-law side, the stuffing just goes right out. Like, it's gone. So getting that for leftovers, that's kind of tough to come across, it feels like.
Stuffing, growing up, I loved it so much. But now, I don't know why, but just like as I've gotten older, I've lost my taste for it.
Not your jam?
Yeah.
Is it a texture thing? Because a lot of people feel like it's a
texture.
No,
it's not
thing.
A texture thing. I think it's more of a taste thing now.
Okay. Well, come on. When you're eating, was it street tacos? What kind of tacos are we talking about?
You know, just your typical carne asada.
Okay.
Put some little cilantro, some onion on there.
See, this is why stuffing has lost its luster for you. You're enjoying tacos and tamales for Thanksgiving. I'm jealous.
They did have mashed potatoes and ham and
stuff
like
that.
So
okay.
We had a little bit of everything, you know?
But still, though, for me, I am a guy that if I were, here's the thing, my philosophy typically is, ham can be hot, turkey needs to be cold in my world. So if I had my way, my wife and I have done this. We've had Thanksgiving just kind of by ourselves at our house. We don't do turkey. We just get a ham, a spiral cut ham, and heat that up. And much more enjoyable, I've decided.
But next year, the Hatches are more than welcome to come over to enjoy the tamales with us.
Might have to. Just pulling back the curtain a little bit, my in-laws like to do Mexican food on Christmas, funny enough. So it's when they typically will go all in on like the tacos. Like they'll do a lot of enchilada type stuff and whatnot. So
Christmas is pozole time for us.
Ooh,
yeah.
All right.
Every Christmas, I always look forward to the pozole.
Lloyd Cole's going to be coming over to your house for Christmas. Let's just put it that way.
Everybody's welcome.
I know, exactly. All right, so we got a lot of fun coming up on today's show. We're going to be joined, as I mentioned, by Michelle Bodkin. She is going to be on her way up to cover Utah and Colorado. The Luke Batari Bowl, we'll talk about who Luke Batari is here in a moment. Also, Kevin Borba, who covers Colorado for the Locked On Sports Network, host of Locked On Buffs. He's going to join us at 11:30 to give us kind of an insight on to what to expect from Colorado in today's game. Is Shedeur Sanders going to play? What's year one of the Deion Sanders experience been like? We'll hear from him. So I got a lot of fun coming up on today's show. But let's dive in. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on with college football. We've got games kicking off right now. Jeez. Wow. Well, okay. So you just flipped over. So I didn't see who picked. Did you see who picked ultimately Michigan and Ohio State on game day?
I missed it. No, I missed it too.
I'm assuming Coach picked. Coach Corso probably picked Michigan, but you never know. He's an interesting cat when it comes to his picks, but looking forward to that. I'm going to switch over and see if I can get the Michigan game up. Here we go. There we go. Yep, we have technology here in the studios that works, you know, going good. But all right, so Alex, first things first, I want a one-word answer. BYU or Utah? And I that doesn't mean like who you're favoring. I just want to know which one you want to discuss first.
Let's go BYU.
Okay, so BYU today has got an interesting matchup because there are stakes on both sides of this game. BYU is 5-6 on the season, just like Utah State yesterday, going into the final game of the season, needing to win it to get the bowl eligibility. The problem is New Mexico they were 4-7. They're not going to a bowl game. They were playing for pride's sake. Oklahoma State, who BYU faces today, is ranked number 20 in the country, and if they win today, it's simply put, they go to the Big 12 title game. That's the stakes on the table. The other thing is if BYU beats Oklahoma State, Oklahoma State's arch rival, Bedlam, obviously, Oklahoma punches their ticket to the Big 12 title game. So in many respects, BYU kind of holds all the cards right now with Texas, who won yesterday, is going to play in Arlington at AT&T Stadium.
I think Caleb Etienne said it best during the week is that they both have things on the line this week, and they both need to win out. Obviously, BYU for bowl eligibility, and Oklahoma State has a lot more riding with the Big 12 championship potentially. And like you just mentioned, keeping their rivals out of a championship game.
Yeah, and that here's the thing. I don't want to say that there's like a conspiracy theory out there, but a lot of Oklahoma fans are rooting for the Cougars today. Like, it's just, I've already seen it going on social media. Go BYU. Like, this might be the only time I root for the Cougars, whatever. It's going to be interesting because if BYU can play the type of game they played last week against Oklahoma, but you avoid one very big thing, and that is avoid the turnovers. Now, Jake Retzlaff, I am fully expecting him to make the start today. I do think he'll have a shorter leash because it sounds like Keaton Slovis is healthy now, is capable of playing. I would imagine that if they'll start Retzlaff in this game, let him make his run. And if he's good, they'll leave him in the game. If not, if he starts to turn it over like he did last week, that's when I think you see Keaton Slovis come back in and potentially his final game as a Cougar. We'll see what happens there. But the fun part about this for BYU is you're a decided underdog. A lot of people are rooting against you on both sides. If I'm BYU, I'm going into this game thinking, you know what? We got nothing to lose. Throw it all against the wall and see what happens.
Absolutely. They could go into this stadium with absolutely nothing to lose. And you get the win, and you win that bowl eligibility that Kalani Sitake and the coaching staff talk about week in, week out, that they want to get and that they need to get. And so I think this is a huge game for BYU.
And it's going to be interesting to see how the Cougars handle the pressure, obviously, of playing on the road here, because they're winless on the road in conference play. They have not won a Big 12 road game yet, and obviously it's just year one of their Big 12 tenure, but it'd be fun to see them get that kind of so-called monkey off their back and get that victory. But the other thing about this is they have not played well on the road of late. Really, the only good road game they have played was when they went to Arkansas, fell behind by double digits twice and found some way to claw their way out of that. The question I've got is, where did that team go from the Arkansas game? Is Arkansas that bad? And Arkansas is pretty bad. Let's be real. Like, they had the whole vote of confidence. Their AD, Hunter Yurecek, I think is who it is. Maybe somebody different now. Came out this week and said that they're sticking with their head coach. Speaking of the Boss Hog, what's his name? I'll call him the Boss Hog. It's because he's a former offensive line coach. They're sticking with him. But then they go out and lay an egg yesterday, speaking of Arkansas. So it's going to be interesting to see, can BYU go out and pick up their first road Big 12 win and do it essentially against all odds to achieve bowl eligibility year one in the Big 12? be a really crazy way to end the season, but at the same time, I can't rule it out for BYU because they've been a team that's been baffling most of the season.
It's a tough matchup, I think, no matter which way you look at it, especially considering their road form heading into, you know, the Big 12. They have yet to win an away game in the Big 12.
Yeah.
And so I think Kalani Sitake and staff and that team have a lot to prove heading into Boone Pickens today to get that bowl eligibility.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how, obviously, they go about this. Now, the other interesting part about this is, can the running attack? That's been a big part of BYU's success last week, is they really found their rushing ability. Now, where that's been all season long, it beats me. Trust me, I cover them on a daily basis, and it's been baffling, their inability to run the football. But then last week, going against the number 14 team in the country in Oklahoma, all of a sudden, they're running wild on the Sooners. Now, the Sooners yesterday got themselves in a little bit of a shootout with TCU, but they did score almost 70 points, put up 69 on TCU in their regular season finale, getting that victory. I just wonder, can BYU control the tempo of this game by taking that same type of rushing attack into Boone Pickens, as you mentioned, and do that? If they do, they're going to have a pretty decent shot.
And that was one of the points of emphasis that they talked about a lot this week heading into this game, is they want to build off that running game. They want to build off that success that they had against Oklahoma. And I think right now there's a little bit more confidence in the running game than what we saw earlier in the season for BYU.
Well, and there should be, because we finally saw, and it took 11 games, sadly, to get here, we finally saw what Aiden Robbins is capable of doing. Like, he was a guy who ran for 1,000 yards at UNLV last year, and all of us out there who were watching him come into BYU, watch his film. I remember Scotty G, obviously calls Utah State games, he called the game that Utah State played against UNLV last year, and Aiden Robbins ran wild on the Aggies in that one. And he came back, he's like, man, they got this running back. He's 240 pounds. He was just absolute bulldozer. And then when it was announced that he was coming to BYU, and all of a sudden, Scotty's like, okay, if he can do what he did at BYU, what he did at UNLV, if he translates over, BYU's going to have a pretty good rushing attack. The problem was he suffered a rib injury during training camp, tried to battle through it, played parts of the first two games, looked completely ineffective. That allowed L.J. Martin to kind of step into the void and really have what I think is a pretty phenomenal freshman campaign. But then it was like, okay, he's getting healthy, he's getting better, and it's like, okay, is he ever going to live up to the hype? Well, he did last week. Unfortunately, it came up short and lost because of three major turnovers, two fumbles, obviously that pick six, which we've had a week-long debate on if it was the coordinator, the quarterback, or mixture of all three, whatever, that caused that. But the thing is, if you can take that type of rushing ability and you can translate that on the road, it would go a long way to helping BYU win this football game. I'm very interested to see if that is translatable to the road. Because if it is, that's a very different-looking BYU squad.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like you mentioned, Aiden Robbins showed what he has the potential to bring to this team last week. And he ran really well against Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just continue that running game. I think not only gives you obviously possession of the ball, but it gives you those opportunities to kind of maybe put Oklahoma State on their heels a little bit.
Well, and hold on to the football. That's the other thing.
Absolutely.
About this. Like, you can't turn it over. Like, that pick six, it was very much an avoidable play. I can understand the young man, speaking of Jake Retzloff, his inexperience and him thinking, I'm gonna fire this in there. Because the play, the team was scrambling around, but hand the ball off. Ride the hot hand in that circumstance and give the ball to your running back, because if you watch that play out, it was blocked up nicely once again by BYU's offensive line, and Aiden Robbins is waltzing into the end zone and completely would have changed that game, it feels like, in many respects. All right, so interesting to see how BYU does. Now, at 12:30, we will have the Cougar pregame show, myself as well as Alex Keery. We'll be getting you ready for that matchup. Looking forward to that. That'll be on 1280 AM, like I said, at 12:30. But before that, you also have Utah and Colorado squaring off. The Rocky Mountain Rumble for the final time? I don't know. Is the Big 12 going to keep that moniker? That's my question. It's not going to be an annual deal. I do wonder if they'll keep that moniker whenever the Colorado Buffaloes and the Utah Utes get together in the Big 12. That's a debate for another day. The question is, what is Utah going to look like? Because, as Michelle Bodkin, among others, has been reporting, is that they are going to start Luke Batari for the Utah Utes. Now, Alex, before maybe Thursday this week, did you know who Luke Batari was? Did you know who he was? I'm going to answer that question first.
I know of him.
Okay.
Yeah.
You want to know how I knew him?
How?
Because he's the guy wearing that gold vest on the sideline. I'm like, all season long, I'm like, okay, who is this guy? So I had to go, I pulled up the roster. This goes back maybe 4 weeks ago. I'm like, I need to find out who this kid is. So I pulled up the roster, looked at his numbers. He's number 19 or 15, whatever he is.
Something like that, yeah.
And I'm like, Luke Batari. I'm like, okay, now I know Luke Batari's name. I probably will never, ever use that name again until this week.
And now he's starting.
Apparently, according to multiple reports, it appears that Bryson Barnes is unavailable. No given reason as to why. Now, Kyle Whittingham did allude to the fact that the flu has been going through this team earlier this week. He said on Tuesday, you caught this up, Alex. Was it Tuesday when he said this? It would have been if they played Tuesday. He said upwards of 12, a dozen guys wouldn't have been available.
Yeah, he did say that on Tuesday. There's been a flu kind of hitting the team throughout the course of the last week.
They had some guys sick last week, obviously, against Arizona in that loss down there in Tucson. But so regardless, Bryson Barnes not available. Now, Nate Johnson, there were rumors that he had, quote, quit the team, had left the team. Okay, whatever. Well, reports officially coming out yesterday that he anticipates entering the transfer portal. I don't think that's revolutionary information. I think he sees the writing on the wall. Cam Rising coming back next year. Brandon Rose is over there chasing a medical red shirt. You have another star quarterback coming in this recruiting class, as well as one already committed in the 2025 recruiting class. The quarterback room is very, very deep on paper for Utah. Nate Johnson says he's clearing out and making his future elsewhere. But that leaves now Luke Batari, junior college transfer, preferred walk-on from San Mateo College. According to what I was reading last night, this is the best part about this. He had every intention of going to Cal, apparently went and worked out, was at Cal pretty much all summer long. Kind of saw the writing on the wall that it wasn't going to work out for him to be part of the Bears and decided, you know what, I'm going to go back to Utah and rejoin the program. And now on senior day, his final game in a Utah uniform, he is in line to get his first career start. This is a crazy, crazy story.
There's been a lot of interesting storylines coming into this game. I think mostly due to the fact that Bryson Barnes is unavailable, due to the fact that Nate Johnson will be unavailable. And so, I mean, congratulations to him. His last game, he'll be leading the offense out onto the field against Colorado. But interesting stuff going on over there at Utah.
Now, I was filling in on JJ and Alex yesterday with Alex Keery, and we had the discussion about this very topic. And Alex came up with a very, very good point. He said, okay, so if Luke Batari is starting in this game, what is the over-under on the number of rushing attempts that the University of Utah attempts in this game? And Alex said the over-under at 48.5. attempts, like in terms of overall, and I am sincerely serious about this. I would take the over. This is a game that screams to me that Kyle Whittingham tells Andy Ludwig, you see Jaquindon Jackson, you see Jalen Glover back there, we're riding those guys to victory. Don't put Luke Batari in a situation where he has to win this game with his arm, because we just don't know what he's capable of. Now, if it comes out that he is just a gamer, he shows up, the lights turn on, and just he's absolutely brilliant, okay, they may start throwing a little more. But the game plan going into this is Jaquindon Jackson, Jalen Glover, saddle up, boys, are riding you to victory.
100%, 100%. And Utah's been, I think, very good at times in the run game. And so if Jalen Glover and Jaquindon Jackson are riding the hot hand in this one, I think Utah can use that run game to go out and win.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where things go for Utah in this game. Now, the other question on the other side is Shador Sanders going to be capable of playing? Deion Sanders, obviously the head coach at the Colorado Buffalo, saying that he's beat up. Now, he's been playing behind what I would kindly term a patchwork offensive line. It's just downright abysmal up front for Colorado. And that's, by the way, the key difference in this game are the two front lines for both the offense and defensive lines for Utah. They are markedly, and I mean markedly, better than what Colorado was throwing out there. Shador Sanders, if he does play, is capable of making magic. He has been awesome at times this season. He's also had his down moments. I think a lot of that just simply goes to the fact that he has had guys in front of him that can barely protect him for more than feels like 2 seconds. It's abysmal. I'm wondering if he's going to play in this game. I've got a sneaking suspicion he's going to try to play, because he just seems to be that type of a player, just a gamer who loves playing. But at the same time, if I'm Deion Sanders and the Colorado staff, you got to protect this kid. He is a very, very good quarterback, and he's got every intention of coming back next year. You don't want to have a situation like what happened with Cam Rising, where he gets injured late in the season. Now, in the case of Cam Rising, got injured in the bowl game. It was early January, and it cost him this entire year. You don't want to have that if you're Colorado, because he figures to be one of the more prominent names, if not outright stars, of the college football universe next year. And putting him in harm's way in a game like this, which for you guys, for Colorado, for all intents and purposes, is meaningless because they're not bowl eligible, screams to me that you got to be very, very judicious in how you approach, do we play him versus don't we play him?
There's no doubt in my mind that Shador is an incredibly talented player. He's an incredibly talented quarterback. And you're right. I think he's the type of guy that if he's even 70%, he's going to want to go. But you, like you mentioned, you got to balance that out and make sure to protect your quarterback, get ready for next season, especially when it feels like at this point, Colorado don't really have much to play for. They're not going to be bowl eligible. So you might as well take that opportunity to maybe protect him a little bit and start getting ready for next season.
And that's the point about this is the season. It's been a good season for Colorado because you and I, Alex, I know you watch a lot of college football. That was the worst college football program, especially in the Power Five, maybe all of FBS football last year. They were awful, absolutely awful. And to see them even have won four games, it's a market improvement. Now, Dion has been crowing about, hey, you believe now, like the whole thing. I think that what they have done, their debut, it can't be construed anything other than a success for the Colorado Buffaloes. Would they have liked to have gotten to bowl eligibility and really start jump-starting things? Sure, but I think they've already jump-started things. Folsom Field is filled up. Like that is a miracle in and of itself. That they've gotten celebrities showing up in droves and everything, and that's going to be the interesting part is to, okay, what is next for Deion Sanders in Colorado? Is it 6-6 next year, or do they hit the transfer portal as hard as they did this time? I'd have a hard time believing they can really turn it over a second time in 2 years, but nothing's out of the question. Let's also say that. But I am interested to see, okay, can they compete more favorably next year in the Big 12, and how big of a leap can they make at that point? But to your point, Alex, what's the leap look like right now? Like how much can you do today to jumpstart that next year?
Maybe by putting on a good display against Utah, he kind of show a little bit of, you know, players coming in that this team can be very serious next season. This team can be a lot better next year. And basically a good performance against Utah, I think, is just really good in the eyes of helping your recruiting and helping some of your transfers that are potentially looking at coming to Colorado next year. But like you mentioned, it's either way, no matter which way you look at it, maybe Deion and staff aren't happy that they're not bowl eligible, but it is a good improvement for Colorado from where they were last season.
And that's the best point you made right there. It's just you can't construe anything other than it's been a success for Colorado this year. Now, like, we'll see what happens next. The whole Deion Sanders thing, it's worth watching because he's a showman. We all know that. It's a reality. It's legitimately a reality show because they've been filming everything that the program is doing, and apparently it's on Netflix, I think is what they signed a deal with for it or something like that, where it's going to become a documentary. It's going to be interesting to see how that ultimately plays out, but I have a hard time keeping my eye off of Colorado because who knows what's coming next with the Buffs.
100%. And I think when you have a coach like Deion who has that kind of star recognition and that star name, he's going to be able to bring in good recruits. He's going to be able to bring in good players to potentially strengthen this squad. And then now you have the kind of the flashy cameras heading into the locker room. Players want to have that exposure to maybe potentially make that step to the next level. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lucrative place to want to go to.
It'd be interesting. The one thing they do need to upgrade, and he's already talked about it, they've got to get a better offensive and defensive line, particularly the O-line. He's already talked about it. He did the Rose Bowl when they played UCLA. He's like, I'm going to replace them all. It's like, oh, geez, put that writing on the wall real quick. But nonetheless, it'll be interesting. So once again, that'll be a 1 o'clock kickoff on the Pac-12 networks between the Buffs and the Utes. Utah looking to go out and send their seniors out on the right note. I am interested to see how things go because, like I said, this could be a battle of backup quarterbacks in the case of Utah. Fifth or sixth string, depending on how you construe the quarterback room for the Utes. Interesting notes all the way around. Now, at 12 p.m., the Ute pregame show will begin. That'll have Lloyd Cole as well as Christian Cox getting you ready for that one. That'll be on 97.5 FM and 1280 AM, the signals you're listening to this program on. So stay tuned for that. All right, coming up next, we are going to move up our 5 minutes of segment. We typically do it in the second to last segment of each show, but because we have Kevin Borba from Locked On Buffaloes joining us at 11:30, we'll move it up next. We'll talk a little about the Utah Jazz, some other calls college football, the NFL weekend ahead as well. Plenty to come right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. This is the Saturday Show. Back in a minute. Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Hope you're doing well on this Saturday morning. This is a great pick, Alex, by the way. This is a jam right here.
This is one of my favorite songs, for sure.
So, a lot of people have accused me of having like a very old school taste in music. I blame it on my dad. That's what I grew up listening to. This is one of the all-time jams of the Hatch household right here. Like, we listen to this one all of the time.
You can't go wrong. You can't go wrong with Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yeah, it's... Elite. It's a good choice on your part. Appreciate you picking that one out. All right. Welcome back. I'm Jay Catch. It's Alex Napolis. We are breaking things down here. Now, let's get into 5 minutes of here. We have got college football underway across the country. The early games, obviously the big games, they call it. Okay, here's my question for you. We'll start off on college football on this. So we got number 3 Michigan, and it's number 2 Ohio State here. I'm not going to lie. Neither one of these teams have really ever done it for me in college football. I know I'm an anomaly when it comes to that because it seems like the rest of the country is enthralled by these two football programs. I am decidedly, if I'm going to root for a team in this, I'm going Michigan. I cannot stand Ohio State. But for whatever reason, this game, I'm like, eh. What are your thoughts, Alex?
I think this one is honestly one of my favorite.
Okay.
One of my favorite college football games to watch.
It typically comes down to the wire. That's the one thing I will say.
It does, and I think that's what makes it so exciting and so thrilling is because I remember a couple years ago when Michigan went into Ohio and won in overtime, and it was one of the craziest games of football that I've ever watched. And so I think that excitement is what makes this game so fun to watch every year.
Yeah. It's not been typically my cup du jour, but I get it. I can admit this. It's always been a game that seemingly delivers on the hype typically. Now, these are two programs that are perennial top five. Like, come on. It's number 2 versus number 3 right now. Like, the winner of this is obviously going to probably be the number 2 team in the college football playoff. I just don't see them moving Georgia out of the number 1 spot, but we'll see. And the fun part about it is I think that I was reading a thing earlier this week. I think somebody said like 30 legitimate division one NFL draft like top prospects are on the field in this game. So if you want to kind of look at some of the future of the NFL, like it's on TV. Like that, I can admit that.
Well, and then to go back to your previous point, uh-huh, is the fact that there's so many implications as far as college football playoffs goes for this game,
sure,
as far as the Big Ten championship goes for this game. I think that's what makes it even more exciting than just number 2 versus number 3, is because you have that opportunity to not only beat your rival and, mm-hmm, keep them out of a championship, but you also have that opportunity to beat your rival and keep them out of the college football playoff.
And that right there, I think that's the thing about this. It's the, okay, you can ruin their dreams.
Absolutely.
So it'll be interesting to see where that goes. Now, in terms of other games underway, way early on this morning, we've got the matchup between University of Kentucky as well as number 10 Louisville. The other thing about this is Kentucky, apparently their head coach Mark Stoops is in contention for the Texas A&M job. It's always tough because last night, for example, they had I call it the Platypus Bowl up in Oregon. They got rid of the old nickname, the Civil War, because they didn't like the connotation of it. If you're going to do it, I got to give credit to the Solid Verbal podcast. They're the ones that first broached the topic, the Platypus Bowl, because you got ducks and you got beavers, and a platypus seems to kind of be an amalgamation of those two creatures in a way. So why not call it the Platypus Bowl? So last night, you see the reports come out that Jonathan Smith, Oregon State's head coach, reportedly is the top candidate for the Michigan State job. And I'm not going to lie, Oregon looked very good, but Oregon State looked off. And I think a lot of that probably goes directly in line with those players being like, hey, is coach walking out the door on us after this game? And he said after the game, I've asked these guys to have a 4-month commitment to lock in. No decisions have been made. You can say that all you want, but earlier in this week, he tells John Canzano up there in Portland, well, my agent's handling all that. I haven't talked to anybody, but my agent, that's why I have an agent. He's taught. It's like, okay, we get you trying to, you're jumping ship. And it sucks for Oregon State. That guy's an alum. He played for Oregon State. He's a legend around those parts. He's allowed the Beavers to go right back up into the national consciousness, right back to prominence, and he's going to walk out the door on them because of college football realignment. I feel bad for Beaver fans.
100%. And it sucks for the Beaver fans, and it sucks for those players who have committed to this program all season long and have been fighting for this head coach. And now to kind of hear those rumors and to kind of see the situation going on, it's hard to kind of rally your guys when it feels like, you know, your head coach is about to jump ship.
And that's why I'm like concerned about Kentucky today. Kentucky's 6-5, so they haven't had an elite year, but they're playing number 10 Louisville, who's 10-1. It's their in-state rivalry, but Mark Stoops all of a sudden, yeah, he's in the mix for the Texas A&M job, and I get why, because he made Kentucky football relevant, which, come on, Kentucky's one of the basketball school, like the elite basketball school. Like, when you make Kentucky football relevant, everybody's going to be like, hey, so Mark, can we talk to you? I get it. It's unfortunate that sometimes these games get overshadowed because of off-the-field forces versus what should be the focus is actually on the gridiron. We'll see what happens. Some other matchups coming up later today. You do have Arizona State, the Territorial Cup. Now, Jaden Rashada, the hotshot freshman who – this is a crazy stat. I don't know if you saw this, Alex. So he's not played in like 2 months. He got injured early on this season for Arizona State. He still leads the Sun Devils with 3 touchdown passes on the season. That should tell you a lot about what's going on with Arizona State.
That's rough.
He's supposed to start today. He was supposed to start. He was in line to start. Showed up late to a team meeting and will not get the start. As a result, Trenton Bourget will get the start. They expect that Jaden Rashada will play in today's game. I am interested to see if Arizona State can put up much of a fight, because what we saw from Arizona last week against Utah, that's a pretty frisky Wildcat team. Now, similar conversation to Mark Stoops and Jonathan Smith. Is Jed Fish on his way out of Arizona because what he's done there? That's another topic for another day.
And you have to give credit to Jed Fish for kind of turning that Arizona program around, because in a similar situation to Colorado, they weren't very good a couple years ago.
No, they were downright awful.
Exactly. So give all the credit in the world to Jed Fish and for what he's done at Arizona. I definitely see the Wildcats taking that one.
I do too. It will be interesting to see if Arizona State puts up much of a fight. It is a rivalry game, and crazy things happen. These are kids that grew up in the same state. Like, crazy stuff happens. Now, on the other side of it, there's some other matchups that I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to the Apple Cup. You got Washington State chasing bowl eligibility against number 4 Washington. You want to talk about ruining a team's dream? If you're Washington State, you're like, we're going to keep those you-know-whats out of the college football playoff. We're winning this game, and then we're going to... Jeez, the bad blood that would ensue from that, awesome.
Washington State have the greatest opportunity today to do something that I don't think most of the country is expecting Washington State to do.
Sure.
And it's going to be, it's like you mentioned, it's the rivalry. It's those rivalry games bring out the best of your team, bring out the best of your coaches.
You hope, at
gonna,
least. Yeah.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun day today of college football for sure.
That one I'm curious about, because there's a whole thing that Washington State already doesn't like Washington, because we've had Ian Furness, who works up there in Seattle, join us. He's a Washington State alum, and he's talking about the fact that Washington State at one point wanted to build a hospital on their campus, but Washington, because they're the, I don't know how he described it, essentially they control that in terms of hospitals that are affiliated with universities, they blocked Washington State. Like, the rivalry, you talk about existing in all things. They're not allowing to build a hospital because obviously Washington leaving for the Big Ten, Washington State being left in the wake. You want to stick one last, like, just stake in the heart of the Washington Huskies, knock them out of the playoff, the final year they're in the Big 12 with a generational-type team and a quarterback like Michael Penix. Man, you want to talk about... You're talking about like the ultimate spite job. The Wazoo Cougars could hold that today. It'd be interesting. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just interested to see what happens in that one. Should be. We also have Farmageddon today. Iowa State, Kansas State. Interested in that one. And then also late night, if you're looking for a game to watch, Colorado State is chasing bowl eligibility out on the islands against the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors. It's one of those late night games. If you're looking for something when you're up late tonight, tune into that. It should be a fun one. All the same. I also mentioned the two local teams, Utah and Colorado, BYU and Oklahoma State. And by the way, got to give a shout out to Blake Anderson and the Aggies yesterday. They beat Mexico 44-41 in double overtime. Crazy game, but congratulations. The Aggies are going bowling, so at least two of the three local teams are going bowling. We'll see if BYU can make it 3-for-3. We'll find out on that front. Now, I want to talk about the NFL for a minute here. A big weekend ahead, as always. It did kick off on Thursday. All three games, honestly, on Thursday. I want your thought on this, Alex. kind of boring because a lot of them just kind of domination by one side or the other. I know that Green Bay-Detroit ended up being a little more thrilling because it was only a 7-point game in the end, but Green Bay went out of the gates just absolutely dominant against Detroit. Your thoughts on Turkey Day football from the NFL?
Yeah, like you mentioned, I think by the time that Detroit started making that comeback, I'd already flipped the channel and, you know, started to go prepare the dinners and whatnot.
Sure.
But yeah, it's not really on paper. The matchups look exciting. Mm-hmm. On paper, it looked like it was going to be a lot closer, a lot more
entertaining. Hey, as a 49ers fan, I thoroughly enjoyed pummeling the Seahawks up in Seattle. I always enjoy that, though.
But a lot of the games just didn't really pique my interest because the 49ers played very well, and I think that was maybe expected against the Seahawks. I think this year maybe lacked a little bit more entertainment.
Now, yesterday we had the first ever Black Friday football game, the Dolphins and the Jets, and the world got introduced to the awfulness that is the New York Jets offensive line because Tim Boyle, good luck to you, sir. Here's the thing. I feel for Zach Wilson. Was he great? No. But for him to, I will give him credit for accepting. He said, you know what? We weren't scoring touchdowns. I get why I got benched for this. The Jets are going nowhere. If I'm Aaron Rodgers, I know he's pushing to get back out on the football field by the time he turns 40 here next month. Why? You want to play behind? We talk about Colorado's offensive line being bad. This is the NFL equivalent of that for the New York Jets. I feel for Tim Boyle. I feel for Zach Wilson. They have zero chance. I mean, zero chance. Now, when you do throw a 99-yard pick six, they're calling it. Did you see the nickname for this, by the way?
I have not seen
the Hail Mary, the H-E double toothpicks Mary, H-E Hail Mary. That's what they're calling that play from yesterday. When you do that, okay, great. Way to go, guys. But I feel for Jets fans. This is awful.
I think the worst part about that Hail Mary was the fact that they had opportunities to push him out of bounds, they had opportunities to take him down, and then I think there was one point where Boyle just falls over instead of making a tackle, and I was watching the video, and that was a rough play to watch.
The Jets are an absolute mess. I don't see much redeeming factor in any of it. Now, they may get a one-year reprieve in terms of Robert Saleh and Joe Douglas, their GM and head coach, because of the Aaron Rodgers injury, but your offensive line is just straight trash. Like, you've talked about wanting to invest in it. You haven't invested one iota in it. You went and got the highest-priced quarterback you could get, thinking, you know what? He'll make up for our lack of offensive line. He got injured four plays into the season. Way to go, guys. Good job, Jets. All right.
Because of the lack of offensive line.
Bingo. All right. Other games looking forward to this weekend. I'll just kind of rattle off a couple here. I've got a fascination with the Browns and the Broncos because suddenly Denver can't lose. Like, Sean Payton's working his magic, making the Broncos look, you know, okay.
I don't know what happened. At one point, it looked like they were one of the worst teams in the league, and they weren't going to make it do very much this season. And now all of a sudden, you got Russell Wilson cooking. Yeah. You got that team firing on all cylinders offensively, and Denver's coming up.
You want to know Sean Payton's reputation as a quarterback whisperer is on full display because Russell Wilson has 2,065 yards, but more importantly, 19 touchdowns against 4 interceptions.
Not a bad stat.
That's not... It's remarkable, honestly.
And then you compare it to what Russell did last year.
Yeah.
It's fantastic for Russell Wilson in that offense.
Yeah, stunning. I'm looking forward to that one. Now, the Browns are without Deshaun Watson. He's out for the season. I got to give that guy credit, by the way, to play almost an entire game with a broken bone in your shoulder and then obviously have it cost you the season. He was upset. I get why he's upset, but that's warrior status to battle through that. And his future with the Browns, always there was like, well, he's worth the contract. I'm like, when he's on the field, he's pretty darn good. The problem is he's just not been healthy.
And I think that sucks for the Browns because their defense this season has really impressed me. They've played really, really well defensively, and I thought they would be able to ride that defense pretty far this year. But now it brings that question of who's going to step up at quarterback and who's going to, lead that offense. And you can't win games if you don't score, and so it'll be interesting to see what P.J. Walker is able to do for the Browns.
You know who's stepping up at quarterback? C.J. Stroud.
Yes.
That kid is awesome. Jaguars, Texans, typically that game would never get mentioned by anybody, but Jaguars 7-3, the Texans 6-4, and C.J. Stroud, we just talked about the big stats, the crazy disparity in terms of touchdowns against interceptions for Russell Wilson. C.J. Stroud, nearly 3,000 yards, 2,962 yards, 17 touchdowns and 5 interceptions as a rookie. Like, wow, what a debut for that young man.
I think he's already in the conversation for Rookie of the Year.
What?
He's the front runner.
Yeah, if he doesn't win it at this point.
If he doesn't win it, something's wrong.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. We'll see. I'm interested in that one. And then the one other game, the Bills and the Eagles, traditionally, the last couple of years would have been a headlining game. The Bills are scuffling along here. I don't know what Josh Allen, he's got 12 interceptions already on the season, and that they're 11 games in. When you have an average of more than one interception per game, you're killing yourselves. But the Eagles 9-1. Can the Bills get off the mat and strike fear into the heart of everybody by beating the Eagles out there in Philadelphia? I'm not betting on it, but it is interesting and worth watching.
The Bills, I think, to me this season have underperformed and have really disappointed me, because coming into the year, I thought on paper they looked very, very good.
Yeah.
I thought they were going to go in and maybe possibly this was the year that they would get over that Kansas City Chiefs hump.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, just one thing after another, and it looks like that team's just falling apart. And so hopefully with the win, they can right the course. But yes, I think the Eagles just right now are too good. They're too confident.
And here's the thing. They don't know how to lose. They only know how to win. That's the one thing. It's the mark of a good team is you find ways to win. That's what the Eagles are doing. I got to give them props. Now, I mentioned I'm a Niners fan, so I'm over here just like, can you just lose a game or two? Come on now. But hey, they're a good football team. They got to give them props. By the way, the other thing about this, the tush push remains just unstoppable. The brotherly shove, whatever you want to term it, they're very, very good at it.
Are you on the banned side or the keep it side?
I get why they want it banned, but here's the thing. If it was as unstoppable for everybody, okay, I get why they would ban it, but here's the thing. A lot of teams have tried it, including certain programs here locally. You got to have a guy like Jalen Hurts, who is an absolute freak in the weight room as a quarterback. He lifts as much as most linemen lift, and you've got a strong lower body to drive forward on that. It's the old Bush push. I don't know if you're old enough to remember the Bush push, Alex.
I am not.
When were you born? What year?
99.
Okay, so you would have been like 3 years old when this happened. So it was 04, if I recall correctly. Notre Dame, USC. This is the heyday. Like, this is Reggie Bush, Lendell White, Matt Leinart, USC. They're at Notre Dame and they're on the goal line, and Matt Leinart's trying to essentially quarterback sneaking. Goes vertical versus driving forward, and Reggie Bush just comes up and just like slams into him and shoves. It's exactly what you see from the Eagles now. It's really called the Bush push, and they wanted it banned then. Guess what? If everybody could do it, they'd do it.
100%.
So
absolutely,
I expect it to be banned. I'm just saying. I'm with you, but I just reading the tea leaves, it feels like it's just a matter of time.
Unfortunate.
Yeah. All right. We are over time here. We'll come back on the other side. We'll get to the technical fouls, talk about some of the other stuff going on in the sports world of the less savory nature. We'll get to all that coming up next. Coming up at 11 o'clock, Michelle Bodkin on her way up to cover Utah and Colorado will join us. We'll also get the Buffs perspective from Locked On Buffalo's host Kevin Borba at 11:30. Plenty to come. This is the Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
If you're coming from the street with dirty shoes on your feet, that's a technical foul. If you switch the radio to some modern music show, that's a technical foul. If you toss the thermostat,
you'll get hit with a bat.
Cause that's a technical foul.
You won't feel my wrath.
That's a technical foul.
Personal foul, 69, offense. He was giving them the business.
A technical foul.
Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Hope you're doing well on this Saturday morning. It is time now, as you heard, for technical fouls, where we talk about some of the more dumb things in sports out there. Now, Alex, you and I have one that's in common. We'll get to that here in a moment. But I want to start with one that you obviously will have an interest in as well. You probably saw this earlier this week, Brazil versus Argentina in the Maracanã. Is it Maracanã? How do you say the stadium that they play in?
Maracanã.
Maracanã. Okay, so... Yeah. This is the first time Argentina's ever gone there and won, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes,
but
that's right.
But this match, it's World Cup qualifier in CONMEBOL, which is the South American part of the world for soccer. But apparently there was just like all kinds of fan just like fights just breaking out left and right. Police pulled out batons at one point in this. Crazy, crazy scenes down there in Brazil.
Argentina doesn't go into Brazil and win matches. And you know, when you do that for the first time in I don't remember how long, but it's been a while since Argentina has been able to pull out a result in
but
Brazil.
This happened like in the national anthems before the match even started, apparently.
The bad blood between those two nations is when it comes to soccer is, I love the passion, don't get me wrong, but obviously you got to draw the line and make sure that, you know, everyone's safe.
Yeah. Well, and the crazy thing about it is I've seen this picture. I saw this earlier. Emi Martinez, who is one of Argentina's goalkeepers, he reaches up into the stands trying to stop a police officer from using a baton on an Argentina fan. It, crazy, crazy stuff.
Crazy scenes. And obviously, like I said, it's not – it's everybody go to sports, go have fun, but make sure to stay safe.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest thing that I think is coming out of this.
Crazy, crazy stuff. All right. Okay, let's talk about what's happening in the NBA. Now, Josh Giddey is a star, like a very, very good basketball player. Borderline All-Star a year ago for the Oklahoma City Thunder. But this is bad news because he's been linked. And you fill me in on this. It was social media that kind of tipped off the NBA to this. Is that right?
That's correct. It leaked. The pictures leaked and some other
He's
audio
connected
leaked.
To an underage female who apparently has a relationship.
Yes.
To fill everybody in there who may not know.
Yes. I'm not sure the age. I've heard conflicting.
We don't know that part.
But it is an underage minor, and the NBA is currently investigating the situation.
Yeah, so ESPN says, in a since-deleted post, an anonymous social media user said a girl who was seen with Giddey in videos and photographs was a high school junior at the time. The social media account has been since deactivated. Giddey, who was 21 years old, declined comment on Friday. He says, I understand the question, obviously, but there's no further comment right now, unquote, when asked about the allegations after practice. Thunder head coach Mark Dagenault also said that he declined to talk about it. Personal matter, I have no comment on it. And that would be my comment on anything related. Not a good situation for Josh Giddey.
It's not a good look for Giddey at all. And like you mentioned, he's a very talented player, and it's unfortunate.
Triple-double machine.
Yeah, 100%.
Like his future's very, very bright.
And now you throw this in there.
Not good. We'll see what happens. I am interested to see how the NBA handles this, because you do have the current situation with Ja Morant being suspended for 25 games. Now, the NBA, I think, tried to finesse the Morant situation, and they're like, okay, stop it. Just grow up. And he had multiple instances where they would, like, fine him, and they would suspend him for – and they eventually – 25 games, bam. And here's the thing. You got to get – on top of this, and I give the NBA credit, they could have come down harder, it feels like, on Ja Morant. They're still trying to get as much star power out of him as they can. The problem is the behavior really ever going to change? That is my big question mark. And with this Josh Giddey situation, I do wonder if essentially maybe the reaction from the NBA is a little more swift and harsh in relation to this versus what happened with Ja Morant. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%.
I wonder if they're going to essentially think that they've learned from the Ja Morant situation and like hammer Josh Giddey and maybe in a way overreact in relation to what happened with, as I mentioned, because there were so many instances with the Ja Morant thing. Don't do this. Do something different. Don't do this. It was a constant. And so I am interested to see where this goes.
100%. And I mean, obviously, the evidence is there, and so there's going to be a lengthy suspension for Josh Giddey, I believe.
It seems that way.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the NBA handles it as far as suspension goes and whatnot.
Now, the other thing about this is technical foul goes to Kyle McCord right now for the Ohio State Buckeyes. He's got two interceptions already in this game. Michigan holding a 7-0 lead. He's gonna have to clean that up if they want to win this game. You can't be throwing picks. So we'll see what happens. All right. So there you go. Anything else you got for us on technical fouls? I'm good on my end.
I think the only other one I want to add is when you have a 3-0 lead at the half of a soccer match,
oh,
it's kind of you hold on to that lead.
Hey, go Cougars! BYU rallies from three goals down. By the way, they fell behind like 3-0 in like the first, was it 15 minutes?
Yes. Yep. It was an early lead, and they head into the break with a 3-0 lead, and then all of a sudden BYU in that second half has probably one of the greater comebacks that we've seen in women's soccer as far as the college level goes.
Well, and here's the thing about it is, so Anson Dorrance, who's the head coach of North Carolina, this dude's like a living legend for, I think, 47 years. That's what it is, 47 years as the head coach at North Carolina. He's won 20 national titles. Dude is awesome. And he said that's the first time he's ever seen that happen. Now, a lot of people in BYU football history will remember the Holiday Bowl in 1980 when Jim McMahon rallied them from, it was 20 points down in the final 3 minutes of that game. BYU scored all four of their goals in the final 29 minutes of this match. And to your point, in soccer, typically when you go down 3-0, it's over. Like, signed, sealed, delivered. And BYU outshoots North Carolina 20-6, if I'm not mistaken, in that second half. Scores four goals. Gets the game winner with about a minute to go in this one. Absolutely thrilling scenes. And I know a lot of BYU fans, there's not necessarily a ton of correlation between football and football. But that those two circumstances, the way that both those went down, those are two of the greatest comebacks in BYU athletics history.
All the credit in the world to that BYU team. They've been very good at times this season, and for them to take that mentality to rally back in that second half and really get those last three goals in the last 10 minutes of the match, where, you know, usually at that point it's desperation time. Usually at that point it's the moments you're just heaving balls up there to find something. But they kept their cool. They played smart and they were able to find those three goals in the last 10. And that's ultimately what has them in the College Cup.
Well, and I think the goal that screamed to me like how like just collected BYU still was the final goal. Olivia Wade-Katoa, she has the wherewithal to say, you know what, I'm going to switch feet here. And I know I'm breaking down soccer here on radio, but she has the realization, you know what, I'm going to cross over here, essentially switch feet, and I'm going to fire to the far post with my left foot. And it was like, okay, to stay that calm, cool, and collected, as you mentioned, it's coming down to the wire. It's pretty darn impressive.
Shout out BYU.
All right, so yeah. North Carolina. Technical foul to you, but obviously we like to root for the locals, and BYU's on to the College Cup. They played for the national championship just a couple of years ago. They will have another opportunity to do that. They will face Stanford next week in the semifinals of the College Cup. All right, there you go. We will come back on the other side. We will talk with Michelle Bodkin, get her thoughts on this matchup for Utah and Colorado from her perspective. She heads up to Rice-Eccles for this matchup. More in a moment. This is the Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.